Soulfulness, which is a trait that draws me to anything I like, is when I can feel, and sometimes it might feel arbitrary, but I don't think it is, when I feel like this thing was made by someone that cares about the thing.
Linky Bill is a musician, producer, DJ, and renowned style wizard from Nairobi. Early in his career, he co-founded Just a Band, the group that launched Kenya's alternative music scene. His three solo albums span hip-hop, jazz, funk, electronica, and traditional African rhythms. Linky is a performer and a talent spotter with an ear for a great collaboration. Above all, he's a philosopher who constantly draws on his vast mental library of cultural reference. His obsession is soulfulness in music, which can only exist, he says, when a person deeply cares about the thing they are making.
This will be all over the internet.
Welcome to the African Imaginary Podcast, Linky Bill.
Hey, thank you.
We're going to start with a little game called Keep or Toss.
Let's get it.
Ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. So I'm going to pick this first card with the square. Tell me where the keep or toss.
Keep.
Keep. Seeker.
Keep.
Okay. Next card. Visionary. Keep or toss.
Keep.
Keep. Okay.
Yeah. I might end up keeping.
Shall I continue?
Diva.
Diva. Keep or toss.
It toss, but sometimes I'm a diva.
Okay. So you have to commit though. Okay. Keep or toss.
Toss.
Toss. Okay.
Yeah, I want to start explaining that.
Okay. Now you point and I'll pick a card for you.
Good people, let's go.
Good vibes. Let's see if the triangle works out for us. Ooh.
Lover. I'm poor at that.
I don't know why I'm laughing. I feel nervous for you.
No,
toss. Toss. Okay. That's okay.
I wish I was better.
Okay, next one. Ooh, collector.
Yes.
Keep. Let's see. Square over there. Okay. Fitness fanatic? Keep or toss?
Toss.
Toss. Okay. Which one should I pick next? I feel like you choose serious ones and I choose funny ones.
I think that triangle next to you. Diamond.
This one, yeah.
That diamond.
This one. Yeah. Okay. Ooh. Actor.
In another lifetime, I would keep it. But
in this lifetime,
toss it.
We're tossing it. Damn it.
I keep going.
Keep going. Yeah. Okay. Oh. Christian.
Yeah, if my mom is watching, yes, this she's going to be
okay. Shall we keep it for your mother?
I'll keep it.
Oh, you're leaving it?
Yeah, keep it.
Keep it, okay.
Got to keep on walking.
Overthinker.
Yes, I am an overthinker. Keep it.
Shall we keep going?
Keep going.
Oh, are you feeling exposed already?
Yeah.
Underdog.
That's could be a good place to. I'd keep it because there's good conversation there.
About underdog, I can imagine. I love that. I love the spirit of the underdog. I'm going to choose the circle for you.
Yes.
Activist.
Keep it.
We're keeping it.
Yes.
It's getting very serious here.
Very serious. Mr. Loverman Shammer.
Feminist.
I'd say keep.
Okay. Yeah, we should all be feminists.
Yeah.
Chimamanda told us.
Chimamanda.
Shout out. Ooh. Perfectionist,
yeah. No.
No, negative.
Which is
affirmative.
Is funny because I am in some things and I'm not, so.
So you don't identify. That's okay.
But with music, I am a perfectionist.
Okay,
with
so it depends.
Every other thing, I'm not. Fashionistas. Baristas. Keep.
Are you hesitating?
Keep. Yeah.
surprised keep, that wasn't
a
very decisive keep. Ooh.
Rafiki, that Rafiki. Means friend in yeah. Swahili. And there's a song by Zap Mama called Rafiki as well. Keep.
Yeah. Okay.
Nilipata Rafiki.
Wow, we've gone through all the cards.
Father. I am the father of a generation. No. Is that not for me?
Toss.
Okay. Maybe in the near future. But I won't have a lot to contribute to that.
You don't want to be seen as a father for now.
There's a maybe to father to these youths.
The next generation. Well, we'll chat about that.
Yes.
But look, this I think it's a good collection. So
good collection.
I think we'll unpack during our conversation as well. But maybe let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your name, Blinky Bill. Where did the name come from?
Let me tell you.
What is the Blinky? What is the Bill?
So one of my favorite producers coming up is a guy called Danger Mouse. He was one half of Niles Barkley. And my name is Bill Salanga.
Okay. Your birth name?
Yes.
Okay.
Ocheng in the middle.
Ocheng. Ocheng. Okay.
Yeah. Which means born in the morning.
Oh, wow.
When the sun is just shining.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so when I was in, we started my crew called Just a Band in Nairobi. We started playing. And I think there was an article about me in the newspaper. And I was like, Bill Salanga wows the crowd. It was like, who is that? I sound like an accountant. No offense to accountants.
Okay.
Kind of dissing them a lot today. And yeah, so, and when we were growing up in high school, there used to be a cartoon from Australia called Blinky Bill.
Mm.
And in high school, people used to make fun of me with that name, like
yes.
It kind of became a nickname.
Mm.
So it's one of those names that I committed to while I was trying to figure out another, like which other name could I go with.
Mm.
And over time it stuck. And next year I've just been announced to play in Australia for the first time.
No way, yeah. Is that in the land of Pinky Bill?
Yeah. And so I've gotten a lot of comments like, Blinky Bill became black. What's going on?
Do the Australians know you're coming?
Some people know.
Okay.
So because a lot of times if you're on YouTube and you're searching or on Google and you're searching Blinky Bill, there's going to be like a fight between me and the original cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And yeah.
If you don't say Blinky Bill Kenya, for example.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it'll give you the cartoon.
Like I see it, okay.
Yeah, I blame Danger Mouse. I actually met Danger Mouse on the streets in New York once.
Okay.
I saw him walking down the road and I went and said, hey, I'm from Kenya. And he just looked at me.
Who's this guy?
Nice. I'm happy for you.
Shout out to Danger Mouse. I'm sure he knows exactly where you are today. So, and what does your mother call you, just out of interest? Are you Ocheng? When you're
now
in trouble?
She calls me Bill Blinky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the cutest way mothers do.
Okay. Even when you're in trouble?
I'm in less trouble nowadays than I used to
be. Okay. I can imagine. we'll get into that. So you've also spoken a lot about growing up in a household with a lot of music. So what were some of your musical influences growing up?
One of the main ones is a guy from Congo called Franco.
Okay.
And to me, Franco is probably one of the greatest African musicians of all time.
Mm.
A lot of Michael Jackson, a lot of Prince, Stevie Wonder, even though I didn't really know, like it was a lot of radio was playing in the house. But also my dad used to really listen to Congolese music.
Okay.
So there's Diplo Dybala, who's like an incredible guitarist.
Mm.
There is Papa Wemba.
Oh, I love Papa Wemba.
Yeah. All those OGs
yeah.
who have now really made a mark on how I see and make music.
Yeah. I think I also saw in one of your interviews you spoke about listening to Brenda. You even know Chico Twala, which I think is, if you're not South African, I think that's pretty cool.
I think a lot of Kenyans know Chico.
Yeah.
Because Chico and Brenda Fassie.
Mm.
I think Brenda Fassie was because she used to use a lot of Swahili in the music. And I talked to someone about this and they were like, she was very clever in that way, that she had Swahili, which reached out to Tanzania and Kenya and East Africa.
Mm.
But in the same song, she has your local languages and she has a little bit of English.
Mm.
Same with Chico, like, but these were more... No, Chico used to play on Kenyan TV all the time.
Really?
So that's definitely a very strong influence as well because... And actually, South African music has a chokehold on Kenya in a way.
Mm.
And those guys, Hugh Masekela, I was telling you earlier, I saw him 3 times.
Amazing. We love you.
He was one of my favorite performers.
Yeah.
That I've seen live.
He
left a big mark on me.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, I've seen Hugh perform live a few times as well.
Mm.
I found him to be very disciplined. He didn't need much on stage, but he had a presence. There was just an energy about him, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't always like a very energetic performance, but he just had an aura. I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. And there was one thing he used to say when he's finished. It's like, Nairobi, we're leaving. And then people are like, no. They're like, Nairobi, why are you so greedy?
It was cheeky as well.
It was cheeky. And over time, I've also come to learn that there's so many different kinds of performances. Like, I'll watch Erykah Badu and she won't have the most like up and down on stage performance.
Mm.
But she's just like, you watch her.
Yeah.
And she's like so cool to watch.
Mm.
And I always feel like she could come before someone who's energetic like Beyonce or play after, and it's like she is who she is.
You mesmerize.
There's different people have different kinds of performances. So now, like, I always pick and choose even for myself, like today, what do I feel like? Like the goal is obviously to connect with the audience.
Mm.
Sometimes you like when you watch like a Beyonce, it's like constantly like on the move, like hands up.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of person.
Yeah, I like that. I've been to one of your live performances or two, and I think you carry a lot of energy. I think you have a great rapport with the audience. But I think we'll get into
what makes
a great performer.
I jumped the gun.
Let's take it back to 7-year-old Blinky. So growing up in your household still, what was celebrated in your family and what was punished?
That's a good question because I don't think we celebrated much. Maybe Christmas.
Mm.
But also we grew up. Now when I look back at it, we grew up poor, but we didn't know we were poor because you're not really comparing with other people.
Yeah.
So you don't know. I was a fairly chill kid.
Okay.
I think, you know, I don't know if your parents over here used to do that.
Oh.
Like when you make when they're punishing you, it's like you start, as a kid, you start preempting the punishments that's coming.
Yes, so you prepare.
You start, you're like crying. And either my mom or my dad says, you're crying and I haven't even started.
Aw, you were a good kid.
So I don't think I was that much. I just loved reading and I loved music.
Mm.
Also, we grew up in this place in Nairobi, which is the East Land. It dawned on me from a very early age that I had to make, like I was the one who was going to change my life.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be, and I'm a firstborn too. So I understood very early that it was on me to improve my situation.
Mm.
Though my mom used to work for a telecom company.
Mm.
And she was also, for lack of a better word, involved with missionary work.
Okay.
And so she got to travel a lot.
Okay.
And so...
That's the Christian.
Yes, the Christian. So, like, my mom is a staunch Christian. I don't think I've ever met anybody who loves God the way my mom does it. I was saying that she's not the kind of person that you can have a conversation with where you're not gonna here. God says, God did. God did.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
You understand.
Yeah. I always say the only Christian I've ever met is my mother.
Yeah.
Because
that's my mother too.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But also because she got to travel a lot, like, and she'd come back with photos from her travels.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew from a very young age as well that there's a bigger world that exists outside of the circumstances I was in. There's a picture of her where she went to Cairo and she's on a camel and then the pyramids are at the back.
No ways.
And then she came back with it and I was like, what? Then she went to Pakistan as well.
Okay.
And I don't think they'd seen black people. So they were treating her maybe the way, like, in terms of like she was a royalty of some sense.
Wow, so like exotic.
So she had like the gown and they put those Christmas things on her. Yeah.
Like garlands and stuff.
Yes.
Wow.
So because of that, I grew up knowing that there's a bigger world than what it is that I'm seeing.
That's so powerful, you know. Often try to figure out why African people are so religious. Of course, we know the influence of the earlier missionaries, right?
Yeah.
But I think you just touched on something which I've never thought of, which is you grew up believing that the world is so much bigger.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was channeled through not just books, not just TV, but through the exposure your mother got as a Christian on her missionary work, right? Which took her to Egypt, Pakistan.
Yeah.
That's an amazing link.
In fact, there's a story that she tells us, which is like she went to Israel. I think that was the first trip she ever went outside the country. And she was on the plane. And she didn't know that your ticket covers the food.
Oh.
So when they brought her the food, she was like, because she's thinking she's going to be charged. So she didn't eat. And then as she landed at the airport, she didn't have the person who was supposed to come pick her had not arrived. But then so she's standing there with her bags outside the airport. And then there was a Kenyan driver who would come to pick someone. And that someone did not show up. So for some reason, she saw someone who looks like a Kenyan and asked her, where are you going? Are you from Kenya? And so she got like a ride to where she was going to. And stories like those and a lot of things that have happened in my life make me believe that there's things that work out in a way that is supernatural at some level. Like there's variables that you can't control.
Yeah.
And like they're completely outside your control.
Yeah.
So it's for you to make out like on that spiritual level what is it that's work. Yeah.
Yeah. And also they make you realize that how I put it is that the price has been paid for you. I mean, here you tell the sweet story of your mother being on a flight, not knowing that the food is free.
Yeah.
You're the second person who's told me a story like that.
Oh, really?
And it touches me deeply because, I had a friend who got a scholarship to go overseas and it was his first time on a flight. So they flew him business class. He was a maths genius. And every time the cabin crew came around and offered him a meal, he said, no, thank you. And just as they're about to land in the US, he asked the lady, he said, sorry, how much is the food? And the lady said, no, it's free. And that was the first time he'd ever flown. So nobody had explained these things to him.
On business.
Jesus, so I look at you and I look at all the traveling you do and all the globetrotting you do and how effortless it is.
Yeah.
I mean, here we are sitting in Cape Town and you're like a local, you know?
Yeah. I try to be a, like, just wherever I go, I want to understand the culture. I want to learn from the place. In high school, they used to teach us about the Table Mountains, geography. And for me, I was just cramming to pass exams. And even like a subject like French, I dropped it because a certain point, part of me didn't feel like I would ever use French in my life. I didn't know that it was gone. And then there was a time like where I was playing in France so much. It's like, man, I wish I could go back.
But you could greet, right? You could say please and thank you.
Yeah,
no?
Yeah, but also on a philosophical tip, I was just like, I'm not trying to learn.
Okay.
Another, yeah.
Amazing. So, okay, so obviously growing up, you celebrated, obviously, the religious holidays.
Yeah. Easter, Christmas.
Easter, Christmas, yeah. The usual. Yeah. And in terms of punishment, were you ever punished as a kid?
Yeah, I was given a few slaps.
Okay.
To just rearrange your brain, kid dog.
Okay,
so. Just a little bit. But also, I don't feel like, I think over time, I just figured out how to just do my thing. Mm. So I was very fairly fast free.
Okay. So early signs of being a rebel.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, you also went to a very prestigious school, which landed you up at university, right? Where you went and studied sports
science.
Yeah.
So in primary school, I studied up until I was just like, I went to one of the top schools in Kenya.
Mm.
And that's when now you really get to understand yourself, because in primary school, I was always top of the top. And then you go to high school where everyone is top of the top.
Okay.
And you now start to figure out where
it's a little bit more complicated.
Where it becomes a bit more complicated. But also over time, I've realized that the way my brain works sometimes, or the way I operate, it's not that everyone else was smarter than me. It was that the system in which I was wasn't optimum for me, in a sense, for how I study or I understand knowledge. I got through, like I got a B plus, I think, and went to college.
Casually a B plus, okay.
And then I went to college and I was called for sports science. And at that time was when I was just like, I really want to be an artist.
Mm.
I really want to be this thing. And my folks were, it was the biggest fight. Now that's where we really fought. Like any fights we had before were nothing compared to college years, because it became very clear to me that I want to be an artist. When I was in high school, I met with one of the guys with whom I started Just a Band.
Yeah. So you met in high school?
We met in high school. It's called Jim Chuchu. He's like a legendary Kenyan.
Mm.
One of the smartest people I've ever met. And we were together in high school. He used to play piano.
Mm.
And at that time, because of like kind of the family I grew up in, I was very church-leaning.
Okay.
And so I'd compose songs for the choir, for the church choir in high school. And he would like arrange it for me on the piano.
Wow.
And then when I left, like we left high school, I thought we were never going to see each other again.
Mm.
Then when I was called to Kenyatta University, on one of the first days, because I was studying sports science, on one of the first days I see him, I was like, what? So, yeah, we ended up forming just a band there. And, yeah, the rest is history. But I did not really enjoy being in university, because I was like, this place is killing my vibe.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And even when we started the band, I kept telling the guys, one day we're going to go on tour. One day we're going to do all these big things. And this was before we ever even played a single show.
Amazing.
So when eventually we left KU, it's Kenyatta University, when we left, we'd started this band, and it was more molded in the ways of Daft Punk. We don't want to be seen. We don't want anyone to know who we are. We just want to make electronic music.
Mm.
But then I also understand pretty quickly that we're coming from Kenya. And because of the media landscape, it was going to be very hard to be faceless and make a genre that people don't, like a genre of sound that people don't really know that well. So we are pioneering this thing.
Mm.
So I was of the opinion that we need to figure out how to localize it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, and I think when we put out our first record, there was nothing that sounded like it. So the first Jester Band record was called Scratch Reveal. But back to...
And that was when, 2008.
Eight,
okay.
Not but back to your question, it was such a big scuffle because my folks wanted me to be a by-the-book person in terms of like finish college, get a job, get do this, all of that, all those things.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm just like, I'm a dreamer and I have this thing. They're like, this thing is never going to work because the most you're going to be playing is at a bar. Like, because that was their vision.
They
did have a vision of what a successful artist looks like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When you look at even Africa in general, maybe the older artists, the Hughes, the Fellas, those guys, I feel like they were more aware of what's happening around Africa.
Yeah.
They could incorporate it. It felt like they knew what's happening in other African countries.
Yeah.
But so when we were making the music, it felt like we want to be those kinds of artists that see Africa outside of these borders.
As a collective as well.
As a collective.
Yeah.
We do have different perspectives, different cultures, but there's also a lot of things that unite us.
Absolutely.
And so when you're telling someone that you want to be an artist that has that kind of big vision, but there's not been a lot of successes coming from Kenya in that way. Everyone did not know what to do with us.
Yeah, I can imagine. But you chose a very unconventional path, you know, from this prestigious school you got into because you were a very clever kid. You go to high school.
Back then.
you meet your bandmates. You go to university to study sports science, of all things. I mean, no disrespect to sports science, but it's not really the path to a global stage as an artist.
Yeah.
And then Just a Band comes out with this incredible track as well, Huff and Puff, which I've had the privilege of witnessing what it does to a live audience. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
It was brave. But mostly because of the collective that we were. So it was four of us, three initially, and then one of the other guys is called BP, and the other guy who we met in KU was called Dan.
Yeah.
And because we were all the kind of like the outsiders, we all had very different visions of what it means to be an artist outside of what the average Kenyan thinks. And so if it was just one of us, that light could have easily been extinguished. But then because it was four of us, like each one had a candle, and then when it comes together, it's much more harder to extinguish it. And we needed each other at that time.
Yeah.
And I always say that. The first project came out, it was called Scratch to Reveal. Then the second project came out in 2009. And on that project was a song called Ha Hey, which became the first ever viral video. East Africa.
Actually. Yeah.
And we made the video ourselves. We made the music. And when it came out, I've never experienced something like that because you're an underground band. No, like, it's only your audience that knows you a bit.
Yeah.
But then one of the songs, like, which was an animated video that we made, got picked up by Channel O, which was a station that we used to...
Massive.
We used to, like, love. And we were not on the popular shows. We were on the more, like, late-night shows where they'd play, like, Central Maine for, like, those... Like, a bunch of alternative...
Okay.
And that was like being on Channel O for us at that time was bigger than being on our local TVs because
That was the African stage,
it was
right?
The African station.
Yeah.
So we've been rejected at home, but then on this other side we are on Channel O. No, I could tell me nothing. I care what you think.
Is that when the diva came out?
Oh, shout out the diva.
How amazing is that? But, I mean, you describe your sound as soulful hip-hop, part groove, part prayer. What does soulfulness mean to you in music?
I think soulfulness, which is a trait that that's what draws me to anything I like, is when I can feel, and sometimes it might feel arbitrary, but I don't think it is, when I feel like this thing was made by someone that cares about the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my definition of soulfulness. Mm-hmm. So even with food, like, you can eat food that was just made, it is what it is, and you can eat food that was made by someone that
made
wants
love.
To make you people feel thing.
Yeah.
And so that's the same way I feel about music. So when I listen to anything, man, like there's a musician from Cameroon called Samphan Thomas when we were growing up, and sometimes I wish, that's one of those artists that I wish I could hang out with and just give him his flowers, because Samphan Thomas, Chico, Franco, Hugh Masekela, all these people who I've talked about and some of whom I've not talked about, but I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Their music gave me life.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes that's a big frustration for me at this moment, because when, like, we're in the age of AI, and it's kind of like you'll have debates about, oh, this AI song has come out and it's people can't tell, like, what the difference is. And it's going to be harder and harder to tell what the difference is. But I'm just like, just train your ears, guys.
Yeah.
Train your ears and be vigilant about what it is that you consume, because there's going to be a time, obviously, when you're not going to be able to know.
Yeah, exactly.
But you need to be able to prep yourself for that time.
Yeah.
And also invest in people that make art that is dope.
Absolutely.
And you care about.
Absolutely.
And there's things about technology right now that is annoying, because, like, why do we need deep fake technology? Why do I need a video that looks like you?
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not you.
Yeah. But I think that's why it's also so important to tell your story as an artist, right? And talk about your process.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important that the public also has an appreciation for that.
Yeah.
I saw your very irritated post about this AI artist who you wouldn't mention. And I was quite shocked, to be quite honest with you, that, you know, the stuff gets put out there. But these artists also have no personality, right? It's just a voice. And I guess they'll create a persona behind it.
I'm obviously very irritated by it. But also, I don't want to be that person that tells people what to do. Like, everyone has their autonomy. You can do whatever you want. But again, because it's going to be so easy to make art, and there was a CEO for one of the music AI companies that was saying that learning an instrument is not that fun. I'm like, why do we want to have shortcuts for everything? Like, learning an instrument is a part of the process for being an artist.
Absolutely. It's a discipline.
It's a discipline.
Absolutely.
It's a skill.
Yeah.
So this guy he's the head of this AI company, was saying that. And I sent that to a bunch of my friends. I'm like, you mean to tell me that the whole time when you were learning this thing, it was going to be a skill that someone can wake up and say it's not fun?
Imagine.
Who are these
people? No, but I mean, I agree with you. I didn't follow the arts route. I don't think I'm artistically inclined, but I did go to a high school for the arts, for the creative arts, for the performing arts, more specifically. So in my high school, you had to audition.
Acting or what?
So, so I auditioned for ballet and I didn't get in because I wasn't good enough. And then I auditioned for drama, theater, and got in for that. But you could have done music, you could have done fine arts, you could have done classical music, whatever, you know. But you had to audition to get into the school. And for me, what that taught me is, A, an appreciation for the arts.
Yeah.
But I also think the arts has also fueled my thinking. And how I see the world and my worldview. I mean, there's a lot that is very intellectual about the arts. So even if you follow a mathematics, whatever, you know, sort of a professional-based career, it does have its way of surfacing. So I disagree with someone who says, you know, there's no value in learning an instrument. I think there's incredible value in...
Yes, and also it's not for you to be the most skilled.
Yeah.
But for you to appreciate that, for someone to be good at whatever it is that they do,
it's
taken a lot of time, it's taken a lot of effort. And this is not to say that I'm anti-AI completely.
Mm.
Like, I can see fields where it makes sense. The other thing that I would really tell people is just be quick to notice when propaganda is being like pumped your way. Because that's also going to be, we're in the middle of a propaganda war, where is it like, we're talking about this AI artist, and you're seeing so many press articles about this thing.
Yeah.
And you can see that money has been pushed so to make it
palatable. To make it big,
To make it big and to make it everywhere, so that, because the more it is, the more you see it everywhere, maybe for some people it's going to be like easier to accept it. I was seeing this, the Rosalia, I think she's released a song that's very classical. It came out 2 weeks ago with Bjork and someone else. And they're talking about the new frontier is going to be being human as an act of resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this thing was made by someone who loves this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And also algorithms and the way they work, sometimes it's like algorithms reward sameness. So if you give the algorithm what it wants, it rewards you by pushing you up. And if you do something that's like a bit on the left, the algorithms might not really pick you because you're not sucking up to it. And it's
frustrating.
It's a bit of a mind war right now.
Is it frustrating as an artist having to contend with that, or do you see it as an opportunity to distinguish yourself from these faceless human, you know, devoid artists that AI is trying to push out?
It can be frustrating, but also I felt the rewards of being myself. And also, I'm not...
And you have a lot of self. I mean, look at your outfit.
But I'm like, I'm also not... There's a game I'm not going to play. If that's a game, can count me out. If I make something and two people care about that thing, it's those two people that I care about. And I've had to steal myself over time.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to make the things that I want to see exist.
Yeah.
Always. Recently, there's been so many examples of this in my history as an artist. Even from Just a Band days, when I took the same song that went viral, I took it to radio, and they told me they can't play this song because it's Afrofusion at that time.
Which song is this? Hahe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. With Huff and Puff, it never became... Like, I remember when we put out the video, there was a group of artists, or students from Sweden, I think, or Norway. They came to Kenya and gave us a challenge to make a video that's one take. As a school experiment. The school assigned one of those projects. And they came to Nairobi and we looked at the challenge with the guys. I was like, actually, we always wanted to make a one-take video. And we made the one-take video. It was really a really cool music video. And then when we put it out, it didn't do so well. And then when that song blew up, it was almost like 3-4 years later.
Crazy, yeah.
It was on Sense8, on Netflix. And it, like, because the right audience hadn't been found for it.
Yeah, okay.
But any time we'd play that show, that song, you'd see how much it moves people.
Mm.
So all these things, I'm not just saying this out of being like a super stubborn person, which I am sometimes.
Mm.
But artistically, I've seen enough evidence over time that sometimes the audience hasn't been found yet.
Mm.
And we're not, I'm not, as my crazy goat would say, I'm not right. I'm not wrong. I'm just not right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's so powerful, though. I mean, we were talking earlier as well about what your sound style is, right? And what your influences are. I mean, you know who reminds me of you, or who you remind me of? Black Thought from The Roots. Has anyone ever told you that?
I've had that.
That's so crazy to me.
Times. I love Black Thought.
I think there's a resemblance there. Do you agree?
When we were starting out with just a band, we played this show in the States.
Yeah.
And one of the people who initially started OK Africa was, he also used to work with The Roots. We went to one of the tapings of, I think it was Jimmy Fallon.
Hmm.
And then we met them. And so I think I have a picture with
Black Thought. No ways.
But a younger me. But also The Roots have, like, The Roots, Outkast, Mos Def, Yay, all these people have had said common. I think that they were also very stubborn about their art. And even the guys from the previous generation, the soulful people who were like the Earth, Wind and Fire, Quincy, Prince,
Mama,
all these people, I feel like they loved music.
Yeah.
And I'm always drawn to people that love music.
Yeah.
There's people who like music and there's people who love music. I'm really into the people that love music because you can always learn something from them. Even if you don't make the same kind of sound, like you can see that they're always striving to outdo themselves. Yeah. And also my sound is like a mix of, obviously, the hip-hop is very strong in the background.
Yeah.
But you'll also hear a lot of electronic music. You'll also hear a lot of African sounds. And even the reimagination of where we are and where we're going to go to next.
Yeah.
There has to be a group of people who are always thinking about, okay, this is where it is now. Where is it going to go next? Like when I listen to, when I go to the village in Kenya, in my countryside and listen to the tribal sounds. Like we have this one stringed instrument, it's called a rutu.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have an equivalent. So it's like a resonator.
Okay.
And it's one string.
Okay.
And you play it with a bow.
Okay.
That's one of the instruments that they play in the village. And even in some of my new music, I'm incorporating it. I'm passing it through electronic sounds because I'm like, I want to honor the people who've come before.
Yeah.
But also I want to see how much further we can push it.
Yeah.
And not in a disrespectful way, but in a way to like expand the conversation. Like if your grandfather was a potter and maybe now you love that thing and you're a potter as well. You're going to use the technology of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Respect the lineage.
Absolutely.
But also what's the relevant way to make it right now.
And isn't it a great way to tell the African story, right?
Yeah.
To find a way to translate, you know, African instruments, African storytelling, African music into a modern context. And I think the world is so hungry for that.
I think that the cool, one of the things, we consume a lot of South African music back home.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I admire, and not to say that it's not without its challenges on this side. I don't know the challenges.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just consume what I think is cool, and I'm seeing like the vision. But you'll see like the innovation with sound, let's say like three step or gom or
I'm a piano, yeah.
Quite, or like you can see like how it's evolving over time.
But
then sometimes you'll hear the singing,
yeah,
and you'll be like, this is like a direct, you can trace the history.
Yeah.
You can trace the history.
Yeah, yeah.
From back then. And I love that. That's something that
we're really
working on back home, to make sure that, and there's a whole new generation right now that's making music that even the older people could really like. But also it sounds like now. It's not dated.
Yeah. Because it also makes the music timeless, right?
Exactly.
I mean, if we still listen to old Kwaito albums, yeah. I mean, you're talking about Papa Wemba, who's an artist from way back.
Yeah.
Hugh Masekela's late. We still listen to his music. Yeah. I think that authentic sound never dies, at least according to me. So, and it transitions, you know, into other generations. But back to you and the master collaborator that you are. So you sort of low-key dropped in how you are on Jimmy Fallon. I know you've collaborated with Childish Gambino, Ed Aziz. So you're basically a master collaborator and also a big talent spotter. What is your production style when you make music?
It's always who I feel is the right fit for a song. And also, sometimes I've just been fortunate to be in the right place at the right time.
Okay.
I was like, hey, who's from Africa? Not like you. Yeah. And so, like, the collaboration with Childish and Chance happened, like, this was around 2012. And it was there's a song you sent me, Fela Kuti, Water No Getting It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was from, like, I love that song.
Yeah.
And then as just a band, we used to live together. So everyone was sharing. We were sharing a lot of music with each other.
Yeah.
And what happened was, like, someone would be listening to Bjork in the house. I'm like, this is very hard music. But then over time, like, your ear kind of gets used to it.
Yeah.
And so in the making of the music, like, those Jamiroquai influence, Daft Punk.
Oh my gosh, you guys, like, listen to good music.
So, like, there were so many sounds that were being made in the same house. And then when we put out the first and second record, it traveled to some people in the States.
Okay.
And one of them was a guy called Aunt Demby, who used to manage Childish Gambino.
Okay.
And he, like, so we ended up, the song that you did was remade by, that sent me, Water No Getting Me was remade by D'Angelo and Femi Kuti and a bunch of other people. I think Erika Kabadu was on that project. And the project was an HIV awareness project called Red Hot and Riot.
Okay.
Which came, I think that album came out in 2002. So these guys were involved in making that project.
Okay.
And then they were making a second project.
Okay.
For Red Hot and Riot. So one day I opened my email, I see a message from Red Hot and Riot saying, like, yo, we'd want Just a Band to be a part of this project. And I immediately thought of that song, Water No Getting It.
Really?
I was like, man, of course we're going to be a part of this. And we were going on tour to the States. And then we met Ant, and he organized a few shows for us. And when we got back to Nairobi, they're like, yo. We were there in the States, and we recorded some stuff in New York in a studio. It used to be a Converse studio. I don't know if they still have it anymore. But then he was like, yo, you know, we're going to get you a collaboration with an artist called Childish Gambino. He wasn't that popular at the time. He was just like on his up and up.
Yeah.
And Chance was just coming up. So for me, I was just like, no, but we want Femi Kuti and all those other guys from back in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if we can get them, but these are the guys who are available.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing those collaboration, and it turned out to be quite cool. And then eventually, they really blew up.
Yeah.
And then we were at the right time, a place at the right time. And I actually met it was an online collaboration, so we never got to meet, but I met Chance.
Okay.
In Ghana, 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
And now we're we did that song.
You just hang out with Chance the rapper.
Yeah, it was his festival in Ghana.
Wow.
And one of my skills that above and beyond the music is I know how to bring people together and make them comfortable to collaborate or help them see their role in the vision. So I always think that that's my biggest gift, much more than even the music, is that I know if I get this guitarist for this song, even if it's he's not a feature, but I know something about how he plays that is going to be a good fit for this song. And when I'm working on another song, I know that there's someone else who's going to be a good fit, even if they're not the main artist. So I'm more
always connecting the dots.
Yes.
Incredible. But you also have another talent. You're also a bit of a poet.
Let me show you my talent.
Well, I want you to spit a rhyme that you've written lately for our audience.
God, precious.
Tell me one of your favorite lines you've written for a song.
This is in Swahili, but I'm gonna translate it for you.
Yeah.
It's like Ogopa, Showstopper, Roller Coaster, Chai Moto, Kwenye Coaster. It's like be wary of the Showstopper.
Yeah.
Showstopper, this is me.
Of course. How else would it be?
Put the hot tea on the coaster so that it doesn't burn the table. There's a song that's coming out with an artist from here.
Spit the Light.
Afro.
Yeah.
That's coming out at the end of the month. It's a house DJ. He originally made this song with someone called Zola Toto, a singer.
Okay.
And I heard it when I was in the studio. I was like, man, I need to be on this song. Because the lady was talking about this guy who is not moving quick enough.
Okay, yeah.
And then my interpretation of it was, nataka kusema, ningetaka kusema, nataka kusema, ningetaka kusema, mchunge hizi siku zaenda, which means, be careful. I want to say, be careful. Time is running out. Make your move quickly.
Okay.
Because time is running out. But it translates. I'll send you the
song. In the same song?
Yes. So actually, Dafro had lost the files. But I was like I was quite insistent. my brother Dafro.
Yeah.
I need to be on this song.
Yeah, and that line belongs.
This line is in Swahili. It's going to capture the imagination of these two countries. But it actually worked. So we ended up doing there's something in Swahili called ukarabati, which is configurations to make it work.
Mm.
But it's coming out at the end of this month, and I'm in a South African dance.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very cool. And then let's talk about your fashion. I mean,
fashion
plays a very big role in your life. We can't unsee your foot. So tell us more what role fashion plays.
Let me show you my talent. Music. I think that a lot of my favorite artists, their look coordinates with the music. So an Andre 3000, when you see for me, this Outkast music is also a big part of my life. But it was so out there. And when you see how they dress, when you look at Big Boy and you look at Andre, and like big boy dresses like a workman. Like yes. He is like a man ready for the job.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Andre is just so, like one day you'll see him with a space helmet or like overalls or like a quarterback, like he dresses like a Viking with like shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And I always felt like it was such a cool extension of his artistry.
Yeah.
And yeah. So for me, I've always tried to figure out what is it about clothes that is also an extension of my personality and how I see the world. Because I make music, but I'm not making music all the time. But how you dress is also an extension of your artistry. I'm also like a, what do you call, like a clothesline for people sometimes.
So people send you stuff.
Some designers will be like, yo, I know you're going to pull this off. So like they'll send me some stuff. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be hard to pull off. But I'm also not afraid to try.
I can tell, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first time we went to Stateside playing this show in Central Park called Summer Stage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that show was just a band, Theophilus London and Amadou and Mariam. The day before the show, because it was just the three of us and this lady drummer from New York. So we had to figure out how to really fill a very big stage. And we're not dancers, so we had to look for like larger than life clothes. And I remember I bought this super big hat. And when I came back to Nairobi, one of my bandmates was like, why are you wearing that? I was like, wow.
It was too much for Nairobi.
It was too much. But then I started wearing it. And in the next few months, you'd start to see a lot more people wearing the big hats.
Okay.
I'm like, okay.
Fashion. So tell me, who are some of your favorite designers then? Known and unknown. Or like, who are you wearing now? I mean.
This is from here. Fuata Moyo.
Okay.
The shirt is Muji.
Okay.
Because I really like Muji. This I got here like a few months ago.
Really?
Cultish.
Okay. Is that a brand? Cultish.
Yeah, a brand from here.
I like it.
There's designers back home that I'm really into. Like Kiko Romeo have dressed me for a long time. There's a t-shirt brand called Nairobi.
Very cool.
Oh yeah, the names are escaping me right now, but there's so many friends who make clothes.
Okay.
And
but it's nice that you experiment with your fashion and you know how to throw one or two things together on your own.
Yeah, but also when I work with stylist, like my brief is always just help, even if it's something I've not tried out, just help me expand what my universe could be dressing. So we go back and forth up until we get the thing that I really like.
Yeah, the look you're going for.
But also maybe I would never have picked out by myself. So I'm very open. Like I want to try out cool things. Another style icon, George Clinton.
Okay.
He's like super crazy. I love him. I don't know if I could pull off some of those things. But he's one of those guys who's been so cool for such a long time. That even when he's in his 80s right now, and people like those never go out of style.
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
If you're old, because you're still playful.
Yeah.
And that's all. Something that I always feel is how to, when people talk about relevance and how to remain relevant, I think just remain playful. That's
and
it.
Enjoy this,
like,
So can we expect a fashion brand out of Blinky Bill one of these days?
Of
course. Or are we still just playing around?
No, I'm working on, for my March, like we're always figuring out how to make like things that people are proud to wear.
Yeah.
So anytime we have a match on back home in Nairobi, they sell out quickly.
Okay.
Because like it's gonna be a unique piece and you're not gonna see it with many people. So like anytime we put it out, it goes out fast. But eventually I wanna move from that and collaborate with other like-minded people who are
and brands out there as well. Okay.
Yeah, like honestly, there's something about like when I was in sports science class, there was one of the units was called sports shoe design.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which now that I was really into. But the problem was, you know, also the teacher needs to be carrying that thing.
Yeah.
You can't be teaching us about sports shoe design.
And not have
cool sports shoes. Like, what are we doing?
Got you. You need a proper sneaker head to teach that course.
You need someone who knows like
what they're talking about.
Yeah, what they're talking about.
Yeah.
The combination of the aesthetics and the health, like how it works with your food, for example.
Yeah.
So in a healthy way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now I can see a Blinky Bill collab with, you know, one of the big sports shoemakers.
Salomon hit me up, man.
Yeah.
Or Nike.
So, I mean, the life of an artist is not always glamorous. I mean, there's some really hard times, you know, bands break up, there's disagreements. Yeah. I think we were chatting offline as well, even about COVID at some point. Yeah. How do you deal with the hard times?
It's always very, honestly, some things you just deal with it as it comes because you don't know how, like with COVID, for example, like I started really suffering from insomnia and I never had insomnia before.
Mm.
But the thought of, I love playing music live, I love DJing, and it shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just thinking, okay, how are we gonna, like this one, you can't even go to anybody for advice because they don't even know. And even like artistically sometimes, if you're someone who is daring in a place where a lot of people conform so much, you're gonna feel the punches because sometimes you're not rewarded. Like I was talking about algorithms earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's algorithms, like there's places where radio might not play me, for example, because they don't get it.
Yeah.
And it's not that the music is not good. It's just like we don't have the knowledge, the expansive knowledge to be like, oh, okay, this thing can fit here. And I released this song. This literally has, there's a song called Kilamu that we put out in 2019 with Ida Ziz and a crew from the UK called Saronde. And the first day that song came out, again, like, we've worked so hard. Like, we feel like, you know, when you're in the studio, you know that this thing is a good song.
Mm.
Like, when I'm in studio, if I don't feel like this song is moving me, I will not proceed with it.
Mm.
I only release the things that I really feel strongly about.
Mm.
So when you release something that you feel strongly about and the reception is lukewarm, you start to think, is it me? And because I thought this thing was cool.
Yeah.
And then similar to Huff and Puff and similar to so many other songs that I've always felt like this song is a good song.
Mm.
It didn't do that well in Kenya. And then a year later, or like 6 months later or something like that, it was picked up by this radio station in France. I didn't send it. They just picked it up and put it on rotation. And I'm always like, man, like, can I be at one point just with... But maybe like that's not my calling and I have to accept it.
Amazing, yeah.
And there's another song that I put out in 2020 during the pandemic. And again, the song didn't do well. Then maybe like 2 years later, it was on a Netflix movie. And then a few weeks ago, the people at Nike selected the song to be the theme track.
Amazing.
For their new campaign.
Amazing.
I'm just like, this, it can be very frustrating.
I can imagine.
And you have a very, very strong person to really believe. I saw this quote today, like being an artist is falling in love with things that people might not clap for. It's like, because for you, it's for you to be like, this is the vision is given to me. The vision is not given to us, it's given to you. And because of that, you have to be very keen to like relay the vision as clearly as possible. And it can't, you can't be like, oh, what do you all think? We want to, what do you all think? I appreciate feedback at some level, but there's another level where I'm not accepting feedback. Like, this is baked. Eat the cake or leave the cake.
No, it makes me laugh because there's a Netflix, I think it's a series that makes, that has a title Big in France or Huge in France. I don't even know what it's about, but every time I see the title, it makes me giggle because that's a thing, right? You can be big somewhere else in the world and be in an environment where nobody gets you at all.
You have to know what it is that you're going to take personally and what is it that you're going to... It's an odd, like, honestly, I can't even really prescribe. I'm just going to tell you that I go back and create more stuff.
Just keep creating.
Because the feedback also helps me, that feedback loop helps me refine some things. Because I'm not saying that everything is perfect when I release it. But that feedback, I also have to be able to know, okay, I thought I'd simplified it, but clearly I'd not simplified it. But also sometimes, like, the kids are going to love it because it's just like, this thing was not meant to, like, there's a generation that understands it much more. And also it ages well.
Like, that's true.
A lot of my work, even from Just a Band Days, even when it's not the most popular thing, I feel like it ages well. I'm so glad I did not water this down.
Absolutely.
So that you can understand me at that time, because when I listen back to it, it's aged well.
It's still good.
Still good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's one prescription. I just feel like you need to, as an artist, sometimes that sensitive part of it, you need to... You need to know how
to navigate it
and just keep creating.
I think that's great advice. But if you look at like the massive successes that we've also had coming out of Africa, the Tylers, the Burna Boys, do you feel like that's opened up the scene for others or just made it a little bit harder?
I think it's opened it up, definitely. And I look at them and I'm so proud. Like, you look at even the people that really properly started it, like the Dibanches and Don Jazzy. But I also always feel like sometimes it's because it's a combination of factors. I think Nigeria, for example, has such a huge diaspora, which is also quite loud and also very supportive of the thing, because it reminds them so much of home. I don't know if South Africa has such a diaspora. Maybe they're not as loud as Nigeria in that sense. But I think
it's growing.
But the quality of the music, I can't debate the quality of the music and also the cultural resonance of it. Because when it sounds authentic on the ground, sometimes it makes it easy for it to flow. But I don't know if I talked about this. I do feel that there's an artist called Flying Lotus who I really like. I like Flying Lotus not because he puts out all the things that I like, but I like him because he's a visionary and he pushes so much that by the time he's done pushing, like, you know that the borders have been pushed. And so it creates space for so many other artists to come in and maybe break it down. Mm-hmm. And there's artists who are artists, who, as an artist, you look to that person because they were a compass,
yeah,
in a sense.
Yeah.
And there's artists who the people immediately get, and all these people have function.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't all be artists that the people... Like, it's a big combination.
Get you.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there's such a thing as an African frequency? I mean, earlier on you were talking about the OGs, right? And how they were very Pan-African, right? So how, you know, Hugh Masekela, Mary Makeba, they would talk about things that are happening in the rest of Africa. There was such a an awareness about the rest of the continent, even in their music.
Yeah.
And when you come, when you think of today, what the artists are singing about or how they put their music out there, do you think we have what we could refer to as an African frequency coming out of Africa?
I think that on a frequency level, I do feel like there's a way that our music hits that is very different from the way maybe like techno hits or maybe like country hits.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way that, like when I listen to piano, for example, there's a way that it hits here. And there's a way that hip hop, when it hits here.
Mm.
So these are different.
I love
frequencies.
That. Yeah.
And I was at this club in Vancouver, and they had the speakers, like, there's a way that they were equal, the music was equalized. I was just feeling like this thing doesn't sound right.
Mm.
And it's an African song. So I know the song.
Mm.
But when I'm listening to it in this club, I was like, this thing doesn't sound... doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
So there's that one angle of it.
Mm.
And there's... I feel like there's two dimensions of the question you asked.
Mm.
Those OGs, I feel like they... were very aware of what's going on around Africa.
Mm.
And one of the big problems that I always feel now is that while there's so much success, which is cool, there's a lack of awareness of what's happening in your neighboring country. And for you to be able to make music that shines a light on people who don't have a voice, but you have a platform.
Yeah.
So let's say what's going on in Sudan, or what's going on in Congo, what's going on in Tanzania. At times, the rest of, like, the big artists in that sense who have a bigger platform, I think there should be a feeling that these people who are in those countries are our brothers and our sisters in that way. And I can use this platform to talk about, which is what Fela Kuti would do.
Mm.
Or the songs where I've heard them talk about what was going on in Kenya. But also, because music has become so commercial, like sometimes you look at the cost of bringing an African artist to play in an African country, and the charges are so ridiculous.
Mm.
And yeah, I want you to get paid, obviously.
Yeah.
But also, there's people who want to see you because you don't just get support from Nigeria.
Yeah.
You want to get support from South Africa.
Yeah.
You're getting support from all these other countries, whether it's small numbers or big numbers.
So what makes it expensive? Is it the rate or is it just the cost of putting a production together?
The rate, the cost of putting production together, then a factor that is also a major one is the cost of flights around Africa, the cost of traveling around Africa.
You're telling me.
Yeah, you know. So sometimes it's easier for you to go to Europe
Absolutely.
Than it is to come to Africa.
Yeah.
So the combination of these things sometimes makes the cost super expensive. I'm not even putting this on the artist.
Mm.
The one I would put on the artist is like the awareness of what the continent needs.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
South Africa was not South Africa before, like was Africa before the white people came.
Yeah.
There was no South, none of these things. Like,
yeah, separation.
Yeah. But then now, because it is what it is, it's the time we're living in.
Mm.
There's a feeling. It's one of the things that I really try to figure out is like, how can we get all these people who are making cool things to play for an audience that is not their hometown?
Like, yeah.
Like someone from South Africa comes and plays in Nairobi. Mm. Someone from Nairobi comes and plays here. We go play in Mali. Like how can that be possible?
Mm.
Because we need to go back to that feeling of we are one.
We speak as
we
one.
We are one.
Don't we need an African rendition of We Are the World? Can't you put together all of Africa's most famous artists?
You know that song by Black Coffee and Hilma Sekel, We Are One?
I can't remember.
We are one.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah, and hopefully it gets better. But I'll put it out there.
You've put it out there. I hope you'll bring it together.
Yes.
But let's see. Talk to me about your relationship with fame and your public persona.
I don't feel like super famous. You know, like I've seen like there was a time when AKA came to Nairobi and he was playing a show there.
Mm.
I was just like, man, this guy's a star.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, because he was
the audience
like,
go wild
they
for him.
Go wild and
oh
he was
wow.
Like, he was I feel like I'm more of a like people respect the work, but I also I want to be famous. I want to make money.
Okay. Yeah, but I think you have an interesting way of
navigating
it. But you know, for me, I think you also embody what this podcast is all about. You know, the African imaginary in terms of how you shop in the world and how Africa has influenced the work that you do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But what are your dreams or aspirations personally for Blinky Bill?
Yeah, I feel like I'm underutilizing myself at some level.
Really?
Like I need to do more. So I wanna see if I can make a film or two.
Hmm.
I'll make sometimes I'll go to like an architecture firm on Fridays. There's an architecture firm in Nairobi and they have an open Fridays. I'll just go sit with them and learn something that's very much outside of my field of knowledge.
Wow.
And also see what the connecting things are.
Mm.
Just because you do get the sense that time on this earth is so short, but also, like when I was starting out, I just wanted to make music.
Mm.
That was all I wanted to do. But then now I'm like, oh, I look at the balconies in Cape Town, I'm like, man, balconies are so nice in this apartment. I feel like Cape Town has some of the best balconies I've ever seen anywhere.
Okay, balconies specifically, not even the rest of the...
No, the architecture is really good, but it's one of those things that is striking because... There's so much construction happening in Kenya right now, but you can feel like it's kind of like the Tower of Babel, and it's like small windows, and it's like very tall, and you're packed in there like sardines.
Okay,
I'm not such a big fan of that, like because, but then when I come here, I see it could be a rosy tinted glass, but I like how the apartments that I casually see when I'm moving around, they look like they're very well designed, very well thought of.
Mm.
So that's those things like those shoes, clothes.
Yeah. Architecture.
Yeah.
Fashion. I can see the Blinky Bill multi-hyphenate brand, but I can see what brings it all together.
I just need to team up with Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Give him a call next time you're in New York and tell him you want to talk to him.
Yes.
But could you see yourself living anywhere outside of Kenya?
Something that I've thought of a lot. I think Kenya and is like a frequency that I understand. Like, you know, like it's home.
Yeah.
It's what I really understand. Then sometimes I get bored of it and I want to leave. Like now I'm here, I'm enjoying it. Then I'll miss home. So if I could be able to continue what my life for the last few years has been, I'd enjoy that. Like, because home is home, and home is where you don't have to explain yourself too much. There's places where you, like, even if you have the best intentions, you might not be understood for one thing or the other.
Okay.
But home is home, where it's like, they get you, you can find, if worst comes to worst, and you're like, where can I get a cheap meal here? You can get a cheap meal.
Where can you get a cheap meal in Nairobi?
In Nairobi.
Yeah.
Like, there's near my studio, there's places where there's this, what do you call the kind of like informal iron, places that are made of iron sheets here? Like,
okay.
We call them kibanda.
Okay.
Kenya,
okay.
Where they make like local food.
Okay.
There's one that's near my
Is it like a market or?
Not like a
It's just
market.
Where people live.
It's a place where they make food, but it's made of iron sheets.
Okay.
And they have like very simple.
It's like street food almost.
Street food almost. And yeah, there's a place, but this place is vegetarian, which is.
Are you vegetarian?
No.
Oh. And what would you order there?
Chapati.
Okay.
With beans.
Okay.
With cabbage, steamed cabbage. Very simple.
Nice.
Rice with lentils. Or we have this thing that's made maize and beans cooked together for a long time.
Okay.
We call
maize and beans. Okay.
Yeah. We call it githeri.
Okay.
And then you chop onions, tomatoes, and cook it.
Makes sense. And what do you serve it with?
That's it.
Okay.
And I haven't eaten it in a long time. But again, like, what I'm trying to say is that there's something about, like, even when I go to the village nowadays, and I never used to like going to the village, but now my dad particularly lives there. But when I go there, there's kind of like a pressure of big city living that kind of reduces. It's like, this is where my great grandparents used to live.
Yeah.
My grandfather used to live here. Like, and so I feel like that faith talks to me in a way that sometimes even the city doesn't. Because you'll hear the crickets when you're waking up in the morning, the chickens are crowing. Like, life becomes so simple. I can go there and think. Just be. The city in Nairobi, like, I understand it, but sometimes it can be high pressure. When I go to the village, it's like I can be, you can sense that my people are from here.
Yeah.
And I don't have to explain too much. And then when I'm elsewhere, like when I'm here, I'm always like listening. What's the sound like right now? What's just as an observer of life.
Like,
wherever I go, I want to enjoy it. There's a time I went to New Orleans last year, and that place, I loved it.
Really?
I loved it so much. It's a crazy place, and I feel like everyone's a bit wonky in their head. But they're themselves. Like, I respect that. Like, we went to this coffee shop, and this guy, it was almost during Mardi Gras. It was around Mardi Gras last year. I walk into this coffee shop, and this guy is dressed like a wizard with a skull on a stick, just walking. Like, yo, can I have a cappuccino?
That's so cool.
I found it so interesting. And everyone's in the house making homemade costumes for Mardi Gras, and they're cutting up boxes. And it's a place where I felt like they are silly on purpose.
Yeah.
And they want to be silly.
Mm.
And it was a very interesting time for me. It was like, okay.
So did you start looking at property prices when you were there?
Yeah. I like that's one place that I would love to at least spend some time in.
Okay.
Spend a bit more time. I was there for like 3 weeks, but I felt like I want to
be there. You could spend more. Wow.
Time there. There's a time I really wanted to move to New York, but it's too hectic.
Yeah, yeah. And noisy. Yeah.
But the noisiest place is Kampala. My God.
Really?
Kampala is the loudest place for me.
Really? I haven't been yet.
You should go. It's they're very fun.
Yeah.
They're very fun people. But Jesus Christ. there's a time we were prepping for this show and we were taken to this place that is one of the nicer parts of town because we were moved from a place and I was that was so loud, I was just like, we have to move.
It's too much, yeah.
We have to move. So they moved us to a quiet part of town.
Yeah.
And in the morning, like at 3 a.m., I hear the sound of someone wailing.
In the quieter part?
Yeah. And it kept me awake till the morning. And then I went to ask, who was someone being killed? Or like, it sounded like it was very painful wailing.
Hmm.
And then the girl like, oh, no, that's the goat.
That's not a siren.
Apparently goats feel lonely when they're on their own.
No way.
And they wail like,
like a crying woman.
Yeah, so.
Only in Africa, eh? So I think Kampala, Uganda is not on that list.
Maybe in other parts of the country that's not Kampala.
Yeah.
Love to all my friends in Kampala, but you know what I'm saying is true.
Yeah. So it sounds like you are a child of the world, but you are very much still very rooted in your village and in Kenya. So.
Yeah, but I also want to spend a lot more time here.
In South Africa,
because okay. I think musically and artistically, a lot of the people that inspire me at the moment are from here.
Mm.
The Msakis, Sanel, my guy Dafro. There's a guy called Ero Manyelo who has been making house music for the longest time. I'm always like, why is this guy not bigger than what? Because when I listen to the music, I'm like, this guy is so good.
Mm.
So maybe it's one of those things where there's an abundance of talent.
Mm.
And sometimes when it's like that, it's harder for people to really, or maybe sometimes it's also easier for a foreigner to come and tell you this thing is cool.
Mm.
Like, I always wonder about people who live next to Mount Kenya, for example, or maybe Table Mountains. It's like, do they appreciate
how beautiful it is? Yeah.
Of the place when it's what you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it often takes leaving, right, to appreciate it. But I mean, if you want to live in South Africa, we can arrange that. That's not difficult.
Let's make quick calls.
That's like the easiest thing we can do after this interview. But tell me, and finally, if a 12-year-old in Nairobi is listening to one of Blinky Bill's tracks sitting in a matau, what do you hope he will take from it?
The world is big, man, and there's space for everyone to really work and be. And not in a cliche way, because sometimes some people are just lucky, some people are not. But I do feel that because I came from a place where that was very difficult, and I figured out a thing. That I feel like I can be an example in that sense that, like, dreams can work out in a sense. And you just have to really work towards that thing, that vision, that dream, like, and become better and better at it. Like, always remain a student while being trying to be as skillful as you can possibly be.
Hmm.
But for me, it's just like be a student and be have a dream and a vision and just go for it.
Hmm.
You might not reach where the highest where everyone else is, but you can remove yourself from a difficult situation.
Mm.
So that's what I feel like. And my tattoos were like a big part of my musical education.
Mm.
Because when I'd be going to school, like they'd be playing like a lot of different kinds of sounds. And it really taught my ears. Like I'd listen to soul music, like soul from, they'd be playing the 70s, music from the 70s. On Sundays and Saturdays,
yeah.
They'd be playing reggae.
Yeah.
On Fridays, they'd be playing R&B in the morning. They'd be playing hip hop during the day. So if maybe I was sick and I need to go back home during the day from primary school and it take out, I know that I'm gonna listen to some loud hip hop. just remain a student and just keep pushing.
Incredible. I mean, yeah, the world is a big place.
Yes.
Blinky Bull, from Africa to the world, a seeker, a fashionista, overthinker, visionary, activist, feminist, Christian, sometimes. Collector, underdog. I think we've done pretty well.
We've done very well.
So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the Ask an Imagine podcast.
Thank you.
Well done.